I'm Paul Wegraff, director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me today is native Delawarean author Jennifer Antonick. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so glad to have this chance to chat with you. I was captured by an article in the Cape Gazette back in late December and wanted the opportunity to be able to chat with you in person about a new book that you had come out late in 2020, The Music Man, Our Rootin' Tootin' Hero, a nonfiction book for children focused on your grandfather, who is a legend in the Southern Delaware arts community, Joe Lear, Norman Joseph Joe Lear Sr., who founded the Milford Community Band and was instrumental in that organization having a prominence in Southern Delaware music from the beach up to Dover and throughout Sussex County. Just a wonderful man and a wonderful organization. And to have his granddaughter write a story about him that teaches children about community band instruments and the role that your grandfather played in that is really exciting. I'd like to start first with you, though, as a native Delawarean and an author even before this children's book. Talk a little bit about your growing up in the Milford area and what brought you to your interest in writing.
So growing up in Milford, you know, Granddaddy was in the military and he was stationed in the Milford-Dover area shortly before he retired. So we grew up in Milford. Graduated from Milford High School in 2002. It's where I met my now sweetheart and where my parents met their sweethearts. Milford has a huge tie for us. So to grow up in this atmosphere, it was fun. It was invigorating. We always had music in our hearts. We were always really engaged in part, you know, thanks to our parents, in part thanks to our grandparents on both sides, who just really encouraged us to always love life and get involved. So Milford was always a huge part of our lifelong experiences, you know, between church and scouts and music, whatever we did.
Now, talk a little bit about the founding of the Milford Community Band, because your grandfather was instrumental in that. It did not exist and may not exist without him.
That's right. So Granddad, you know, he was in the military. He moved on to General Foods as a second career after he retired from the military. He had a full 21 and a half, I think, years of service for the country. So after he put in another 20 years of work with General Foods, he decided he would go back to college. And so he went to Wesley College for a time and he graduated from there, joined their band while he was there. And then when he graduated from college, he decided he didn't have anywhere else to play. And that's kind of the premise behind the book too, is, you know, where were adults going to play music? Was he too old? Because it was just the kids who played music. You know, he had volunteered at that point at the high school, when I was in high school. So my granddad was always in and out of the halls, you know, talk about awkward. We would try to avoid Granddaddy. You know, we loved the hugs and we loved knowing that he was there, but gosh, I could not do anything wrong without Granddaddy Joe knowing about it, which is cool now, you know, thinking back on it. So he went through a new growth experience almost in, well, gosh, I'm not a kid anymore. I can't play music. What am I going to do? And then the director of the high school band at the time suggested, hey, why don't you start a community band? And that was Dr. Thompson. And Granddad's like, you know, that's what I'm big enough to do. And so that's what he did. And it sounds so simple. And obviously there's so much that goes on behind the scenes to start up an organization like this and to keep it going for 30 years with all of the folks involved. But when it really comes down to it, it was that simple. I'm going to start a community band because I love music.
Yeah, having grown up in Milford and having grown up around the community band, talk a little bit about what you see as the function, the role that that community band played in the life of the community. Where, you know, who did they serve? Who did they play for? You know, you talked a little bit about its impact on you. How does a community band impact the community, both the participants as well as the audiences?
Well, it's huge, and I appreciate that you mentioned both participants and the audience, because the impact of a community band really is much larger than any one of those two groups could imagine. You know, for the participants, they're getting back to something they enjoy doing, or maybe they're learning something new. You know, music has a profound experience in our lives when it comes to mental health and growth, all those things. So these people now had an outlet that they didn't have before. So that's huge. And then for the audiences, you know, for those of us who get to sit back and enjoy these people just doing what they love to do, it's just, you know, it goes back to that word, invigorating and energizing. You know, they would just put so much energy and effort into what they did. And just to watch them play is just amazing.
And having worked with the Milford Community Band through my capacity with the Division of the Arts and seeing the passion that your grandfather had for the band, it was, I think, unparalleled, his love of the band and getting it out in the community. Talk about some of the different venues where they appear and where you saw them perform.
Sure. So I personally saw them perform most of the time around Milford, since that's where we were from. And we would plan our trips out to the festivals or to the nights out, whatever it might be, so that we were there when the band was there.
Uh-huh.
You know, my sister and I were in choir growing up. And so Granddad would come to our concerts, we would go to theirs, you know. they also went all kinds of places. For example, the Bethany, down in Bethany, they have a jazz festival at the end of summer.
Yep.
The Funeral of Summer, I think, is kind of what it's called. And so they would play down there every year. I believe the Sea Witch Festival is something else they played at. The Air Museum in Dover is a place that they played at almost religiously, dare I say it, every single year, you know, to honor the men and women who serve our country. They would go up your way, although I'm not sure of the venues. Mm-hmm. Granddaddy also enjoyed playing in the Tuba Christmas, which happens in Washington, D.C. every year. And every year he would come back and he'd tell us, I was the oldest guy at Tuba Christmas again this year. And again, it's just this, it's so fun just to watch them play and to know that they're going to all these different places, you know, because without this band, would he have gone to Tuba Christmas? Don't know. Would he have played for the Sea Witch Festival? Would the folks who enjoy the Bethany Blues, the Bethany Parade, would they have even experienced a community band down there like we have? We don't know, but just, you know, this experience was huge.
Now, back to your work as a writer. What I know we talked before we went on air about your writing for the Delaware Farm Bureau. Talk a bit about your background in writing and what got you into that whole career, both in your day job and in your, you know, non-day job of writing children's books.
That stems right back to Milford. Gosh, I love that little town. I can't say enough about it, to be honest with you. I was in journalism in high school, that's kind of where I found my love for writing, and not just for writing, but designing and laying out newspapers was kind of my love for a very long time. I still love doing that. We used Quark Express, which is an old school program. Now we use Adobe InDesign. You know, our teacher there gave us the tools and the skills we needed to jump right from high school to a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I still went on to go to college and learn more about the trade and the skills. But I think that trade love, you know, there's something about learning the trades to know that I had the skills at 18 to be able to sustain my family was a catalyst in my career, you know. So that's where the love started, was right there at Milford High School learning a trade. And then I went on to college. I graduated from Delaware Tech with an associate's in communications. I worked with the Delaware State News for quite a while. And I was the news editor. A lot of people know me as the news editor for the Milford Chronicle. So I got to take my skill back home and run the hometown newspaper, which was just so neat. It's just that family love, that community love. And so now, fast forward a little bit of time, I'm with the Farm Bureau, where I get to still tell stories with a journalistic quality, but I get to focus them on farmers and ranchers and consumers and help tell their story, which in a pandemic world, you know, we need to go back down to the basics. So I'm so excited to have that opportunity to be able to share their stories.
Well, I want to pursue that further, because that is, I think, a very important part of understanding our communities. Let me first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Joining me today is Jennifer Antonick, native Delawarean and author from Milford. Jen, your work with Farm Bureau, your work with the newspapers, your background in journalism, it seems to me that would have necessitated kind of a range of writing styles and a range of considerations. But I want to get to your work with the Farm Bureau, because your point about telling the story is important. You know, we often hear about research and people want data and they want numbers and figures. But I also am a firm believer that if you only have data without the stories, or stories without the data, you're missing an important component. So talk a little bit about the kinds of stories that you tell for the Farm Bureau and how they help flesh out what that means for the lives of the people in your community.
So one of my favorite stories I got to tell last year was about the Farm to Families box program, food box program. And essentially, the government contracted with local farmers throughout the country. And we had a farm, I believe, out of Dagsboro that contracted for this. And they ended up having to pack, I want to say, 1 million boxes. And the story has been a little while ago. You know, when you write a story, it kind of, you put, right, put all the things down on paper and then it goes out of your head. But it was a good solid 1 million boxes, I believe, that this farm had to put together. And it wasn't just produce and items that that farm produced. They had to outsource and work with farms in the Dover area, farms in Maryland, and, you know, to be able to stock these boxes with dairy products, potatoes, you know, whatever the government said they needed to provide in these boxes. The story I got to tell was not just that this was happening, but what impact it made in the lives of the farmers. Mm-hmm. You know, because when coronavirus hit and we all had to get stuck at home, we couldn't go to the schools, we couldn't go to restaurants, these places were huge, huge consumers in the food industry. So some of the farmers really were kind of wondering, what are we going to do? Now we don't have enough folks to purchase our products, because, right, sure, it's the same amount of people purchasing the products, just in a different way. But they had contracts with the schools, they had contracts with the restaurants. So without those contracts, now they had to kind of reinvent themselves a little bit to be able to push their products out there. So what these boxes did is they allowed the farmers to still have some kind of contract and still be able to sell their produce or whatever it might have been in a way that would still sustain their farms. And in several cases, it actually sustained their farms better than the contract with the restaurant or the schools might have done, which offset some of the other cuts that they had to make because of the pandemic. So that was a story I feel like wasn't told enough, you know, because again, we just see the surface of everything. We just skim, okay, the government contracted for these boxes and isn't that great? Or some people might be upset, oh, isn't that terrible because the government's putting out money, we didn't want it to go there. But the why and the how it affected our farmers was really cool to, you know, get into that nitty gritty. And it also allowed me, like you said, you know, you tell the story, but you also include the data. So the farmers were able to tell me the data in their own businesses. It helped, you know, it was a 10% increase, or the pandemic had a 50% decrease in my farm production, or all those things matter. And it was really cool to be able to tell that story.
Well, let's shift gears now and take your skills into the writing of The Music Man, Our Rootin' Tootin' Hero, about your grandfather, Joe Lear. What compelled you to move in this direction with that book? What considerations did you take into account? And what sort of went through your head in terms of shifting gears to write for an audience of youth?
So I love adventures. I'm not a very adventurous person. I don't like go on the ropes course, tossing upstate. But I love the literary adventures and the adventures movies can take us on, you know, and I think that's so important to have our children explore too. So this year, Granddaddy passed away. It was, I think, in June. And that just kind of overtook us for a while. And then when I really got down to thinking about, you know, what am I feeling right now? I'm feeling sad and mad and upset, and I'm feeling a loss for the community, you know. Well, how can I deal with that? And it took me back to writing, because writing has a very therapeutic quality, just like music, just like dancing, you know, all these forms of art, you know. So I said to myself, you know, I've got to write the story. Christmas was coming up. I said, wouldn't that be an amazing end to a tumultuous year to be able to provide the story for my family? And so that's what I did. I sat down and I really had to think about, okay, do I want to make this for adults? Do I want to make this for children? Well, as you might remember, Granddad was all about teaching and all about encouragement and youth. And he loved telling stories. He loved being funny. And he just really loved to cultivate that atmosphere where people could learn. And gosh, he loved the kids. So that's, I kept coming back to kids, kids, kids. Granddaddy's legacy is teaching. And so, you know, I came back to writing a children's book, which is obviously different than what I have done in the past in terms of writing. So it really took a lot of effort to skim the story down. You know, the kids didn't need to hear about every story he had from the military, or every story he had from General Foods. They probably didn't even know that he worked there in the first place. What they needed to know was, what was music? What was a community band? Why did he love music? And what can they do with this information? Mm-hmm. You know, and my thought too was, you know, we have several kids of our own, and our oldest is in fifth grade now, and he is in the band. That's cool. It's something that in our district, the kids don't get to do until they're in fifth grade. Well, they also might not have experienced any of these instruments until they were in the fifth grade. You know, the kids might experience the xylophone or the recorder, but they don't experience the tuba, mm-hmm. or, you know, the trombone. So I thought, you know, there's got to be a way I can include these instruments in this book with all of these great concepts. And I think it came out really well, in a way that I hope that the book allows families to have a conversation with each other about music, about maybe their own past with music, and encourage the kids that, you know, it doesn't matter how big the instrument is and how little they might be, or the other way around, and it doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are, music is a constant.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 2 minutes left before I forget. Remind our listeners how they can find out more about you and availability of both The Music Man, Our Rootin' Tootin' Hero, as well as another children's book, Boops and Goobs Find a Home.
That's right. So they can go online. I am on Facebook, and I have a new TikTok now. So if they have TikTok, I'm there. But my website with all of my links is www.jenniferantonick.com. So it's www.jenniferantonick.com. grandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandadgrandad that's right.
Yeah, both in paperback and Kindle, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Great. Now, in the little bit of time we have left, one of the things I was fascinated with was how you used the book about your grandfather to expose students to, or to expose youth to, a number of different instruments. And I'm curious, I'm looking at a list here of tuba, trombone, guitar, banjo, harmonica, trumpet, bells. Did your grandfather play all of those?
He played all of those. And I think there's a few I'm missing.
Now, was he a trained musician, or did he pick these up on his own? Do you know?
Both. When he was in high school, he was in the ROTC, and he was in the band there. So somewhere in his early years, he was taught music. And then as he went on as an adult, he would pick up new instruments here and there.
Fascinating. In the time we have left, talk a little bit about your other book, Boops and Goobs Find a Home.
Boops and Goobs Find a Home is a fiction book because, again, we just love stories. We love adventures, and you can't have the serious without the funny.
Right.
So it's actually based on two of our pets. They are Orange Slice and Garfield, and they just do the funniest things around our house. And we figured in a pandemic world, we needed a little bit of funny to offset the seriousness of the world. And so that's kind of how Boops and Goobs came about. Just like the music band, Boops and Goobs has family pictures in there, but they're picturized almost, so that they're altered so that they look like paintings.
That's fascinating. And I believe, just quickly, you use your sister as an editor, which I think is great. I'm afraid we're running out of time. Jennifer Rash, is it? Do I remember? Is that your
Jessica
sister?
Jessica Rash, yep.
Yeah.
She's a teacher at Milford Central Academy now.
Yeah, which is great. Well, we're running out of time here. Jennifer Antonek, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been a delight talking with you about your work, as well as the legacy that your grandfather, Joe Lear, has left behind.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.